This country was built on a distinctly American work ethic. But today, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and diminished our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make a variety of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more. All made right here in the USA, from growing the cotton to adding the final touches. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs for seamsters, cutters, and factory workers in towns and cities across the United States. And it's about more than an income. Jobs bring pride, purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Screen Time with John Fardy. This is News Talk.
Hello and welcome to Screen Time. I'm John Fardy and this is News Talk's TV and movie show. This week on the show, legendary actor Stellan Skarsgård on his role in Dune Part 2, as well as other career highlights like Chernobyl, Good Will Hunting and Mamma Mia. Chris Wasser reviews Adam Sandler in space and Brendan Gleeson in a Dublin pub. Plus the dynamic duo of Jenny Kelly and Mairead Ronan on their favourite movie. I'm open on Twitter, John_Fardy, or you can email me screentime@newstalk.com. This show is available as a podcast every Friday at 5 p.m. on newstalk.com or the Newstalk app powered by Go Loud, and it's on the radio every Saturday at 6 p.m. here on Newstalk. Good weekend to you all. I hope you're doing well. A lot of people enjoyed the Jared Harris interview last week, and some people pointed out that he was maybe a little prickly at times, particularly when I asked him about his dad not getting the reception I feel he deserves in Ireland. But you know what? And he was a lovely guy before and afterwards. But there's something nice about someone pausing when you ask them questions and really thinking about and sometimes disagreeing. You know, I can ask leading questions. And so an awkward listen once or twice maybe in it, but a very good listening, apparently, with the numbers of people who've listened to it. And on TikTok, they put up a video and over 250,000 people watched it. Whatever that means. Anyway, that was last week's show. Let's get to some more movies and TV this week. And I have to start the show with the sad passing of the great comedian Richard Lewis. Richard Lewis was a stand-up comedian who kind of came of age in the 80s, I suppose. And he was even in Men in Tights, Mel Brooks's pastiche, let's call it, of Robin Hood. But for so many people, they think of him in Curb Your Enthusiasm, playing a fictionalized version of himself opposite Larry David. And it's just comedy gold. Much of what they did together as friends who are constantly at each other was improvised. And, you know, Larry David, who's a man, I don't think, prone to wayward emotion. You might have heard this earlier in the week, but he said this great thing this week. Richard and I were born 3 days apart in the same hospital. And for most of my life, he's been like a brother to me. He has the rare combination of being the funniest person and also the sweetest. But today he made me sob, and for that, I'll never forgive him. What a beautiful tribute from Larry David. And listen, words are fine, but here's the genius of them together.
She cares about you.
Oh, she cares about me?
Yeah.
Okay, listen, it's none of her business.
She has bowel concern for you, and I do too.
I don't need her bowel concern.
How much
water? I drink a lot of water, that's all. I drink a lot of water, big deal.
A lot of water?
Yeah,
drink more than a porpoise.
Usually water, you know, usually have bottles of water.
No one goes to the bathroom. No one pisses that often without drinking like thousands of gallons a week.
Okay, all right. Let's stop talking about this. My bathroom habits are not your concern. Okay?
All right, then I won't care about your health. Fine.
You don't need to care about... I'm in very good health.
You are?
I got a beautiful colon. You want to take a picture of my colon?
I have a VHS of mine.
Fine. You can put my colon up next to your colon. We'll see who's got a cleaner,
healthier
colon.
I'll have a colon contest with you anytime
you want to have a colon contest,
yeah,
buddy. Yeah.
I mean, what are you eating? A lot of grains and fruits and nuts? Where are you going?
Wait.
What? You're not going to the bathroom again,
are you? No, I'm not going to the bathroom.
You are going to the bathroom. No. I thought you were going to the bathroom.
Larry David opposite the late, great Richard Lewis there from Curb Your Enthusiasm and RIP Richard Lewis. Now, we have a lot on the show this week and I have to get to June part two. But before I do, I want to quickly mention the new Virgin One show, Faithless, starring and co-written by Baz Ashmawi. I thought was very good. I say that surprisingly because I think it's fair to say maybe sometimes with Irish television comedy, we watch from behind our fingers going, is this going to be any good? This is very good. So far, two episodes of on. Baz Ashmawi again plays, I don't want to say a fictionalized version of himself because that wouldn't be the case, but he plays an Irish Egyptian father whose wife dies in the first episode about 3 seconds after she tells him he's useless. He now has to raise three daughters by himself. He's Irish Egyptian and he's of a Muslim background, and his brother returns, who is hilarious in this and seems to be some kind of sex addict who cannot say no when the mood takes him, and the mood takes him a lot. He's attempting to now look after his three daughters who have varying degrees of contempt for him because he's been a bit of a waster in life, is what we've learned. He hasn't paid bills. He's a comedy writer who doesn't seem to have worked in a long time. He didn't seem to have been that good a husband. But so far, this has been a nice comedy drama that I enjoyed. And there were some real laugh-out moments in it, particularly at the wake for his deceased wife, a scene with red wine. I laughed out loud a good few times. So I say this a lot, but cautiously optimistic so far about Faithless on Virgin Media on Monday nights, Virgin Media 1. Now,
you've been fighting the Harkonnens for decades. My family's been fighting them for centuries. They were massacred alongside my father.
Your father didn't believe in revenge.
We believe in Fremen.
Let me fight beside you. Show me who you are. Your father. A weak man.
Clip there from June part two, the cinema event of the week, maybe the first part of the year, the whole year, I'm not sure about that. Dune, or the Americans call it Dune, this famous Frank Herbert novel. David Lynch made a movie of it back in the 80s, wasn't very successful. People claimed it was unfilmable. Denis Villeneuve's Dune Part 1 was highly successful and also very good. I didn't give it a great review at the time. I think I was tired that night. I did watch it again and enjoyed it a lot more. Dune Part 2 is very good. I enjoyed it so far. It's kind of hard to get into the entire plot with you. Let's just say Timothée Chalamet is back as Paul Atreides. It kind of picks up where Dune Part 1 ended, and you probably need to watch Dune Part 1 to get up into it. He's an aristocrat of sorts, Timothée Chalamet's character, Paul Atreides, whose family have been massacred by the evil Harkonnens. Stellan Skarsgård is the Baron who's in charge of the Harkonnens, and Dave Bautista is his brutal enforcer. And Paul and his mother, Rebecca Ferguson, are now hiding out with the Freemen, who are this kind of native people on the planet Arcades. Forgive me if I'm losing you, but this is what it's all about. It's kind of, I don't want to say convoluted, but it has a rich narrative to it. Javier Bardem is the leader of the aforementioned Freeman group. He's really good in it as well. And he befriends the young warrior of the Freemen, Zendaya, who's in it a lot as well. And it begins a kind of desert battle fighting against the Harkonnens. There's a new character in it who's part of the Harkonnens, played by Austin Butler, who's a real bad dude in this. This has a huge cast. Timothée Chalamet, Zendaya, Rebecca Ferguson, Josh Brolin, Austin Butler, Florence Pugh, and, as I mentioned, Stellan Skarsgård, who plays the Baron, the man in charge of the evil Harkonnens. And if you've seen the first one or you've seen clips, he is made up to look like an almost overweight Marlon Brando with a huge body and a scowling face. Pretty convincing villain, I have to say. Look, it's hard to kind of get through everything that happens in even Dune Part 1 or Dune Part 2, but it is a very good sci-fi movie. Kind of shades of David Lean meets Star Wars. I hope that's not doing it a disservice. Some of the scenes on the desert planet are brilliant and this. I found it a really good sci-fi watch. Now, Stellan Skarsgård, as I say, stars as the Baron. He is a legendary actor who has been in movies from the early days with Lars von Trier, like Breaking the Waves. He's been a big, successful Hollywood actor in Thor Ragnarok. He was in Good Will Hunting, Mamma Mia. He is the Swedish actor. You may also know him from Chernobyl. He has 8 children. He's lived a fascinating life, a fascinating career. And I had a chat with him about Dune and a bit more besides. So Stellan, let me start with the boring but obvious question that everyone wants to know. How much of a nightmare was it to get made up for Baron every day?
Well, it was pretty of a nightmare. I mean, in the first film, when I was naked, it took 8 hours sitting still, absolutely still. And then in the second film, I never was naked, so I just had to do 6 hours, but it still was a nightmare.
I can imagine. And, you know, I've spoken to a couple of people on Game of Thrones, and they all had this reaction of, you know, I don't do sci-fi, I don't do fantasy, I don't do dragon babies. And yet they read Game of Thrones and they thought, wow, this is like Samuel Beckett or something. And Dune, it strikes me, is similar to that. There are all sorts of things going on politically, environmentally, all sorts of things. Is that kind of the attraction of something like this for you, just the meat that's contained in it?
Yeah, well, of course. I mean, the setting never really makes a film. What is important is the essence of a film, and the essence can be in the medieval times, it can be in the future, it can be whatever. I'm not interested in sci-fi per se. It's not interesting to see the gadgets they have in the future or something like that. It is always a human story that is at the core of it.
Yeah, yeah. Now, Denis Villeneuve, it seems to me that he's like a great football manager and that the players just want to seem to make him happy. That seems to come up. Every actor I hear talk about him, it's almost like they want to do good by him because he's so respected.
Yeah, that's true. He's lovely. His set is so quiet that nobody's shouting. Everybody knows what they're doing. There's no insecurity, and he's very humorous and very funny. And he also, the actors feel that he sees them. Mm. And that is important. I mean, it feels like, I mean, It sounds weird, but it's as pleasant as the Lars von Trier sets.
Yeah, and that, you know, some people are shocked by that because Lars von Trier has a reputation of being quite, let's say, cranky at times, unusual. But I've heard you say before, Lars von Trier sets are very pleasant places, despite what you might think.
Yeah, absolutely, and there's no hierarchy, and he's got a great sense of humor, and everybody respects each other and insults each other frequently, you know.
Excellent. Well, we're all about that here in Ireland, the pleasant insult, you know. Tell me this, you mentioned Lars von Trier. I spoke to Emily Watson last year and we were talking about God's Creatures, but of course I brought up Breaking the Waves because I have vivid memories of seeing that as a teenager and being kind of shocked by it. And it is a shocking movie, certainly at the time in terms of what happens to her. When you got that script, were you going in your head, wow, this is somewhere different, I'm not sure how this is going to land? Or did you just say yes straight away?
I read the script and I closed it and I said, yes, finally a love story I can relate to. because it was about love. It wasn't getting laid or getting married or getting anything. It was that I could finally relate to. It was about the very essence of love. It wasn't about whether you get left, whether you get married or something like that.
Yeah. And tell me this, you mentioned a love story that you can believe in, and that brings me to Mamma Mia. Was that a life-changing moment for you, the success of that movie and indeed the sequel, that you suddenly, you know, became an aging hunk, if I may be so bold? Did that change your life?
No. It didn't. I mean, it was great fun, and it was with both those films. It was just a vacation. It's not even a film. It's something else.
Yeah, I am of a certain age. I'm 48, and I have a feeling men my age probably talk to you a lot about Good Will Hunting. But what I wanted to know about that was your sense of your character in that, because he begins as somewhat of a villain, maybe, in that he wants Matt Damon's character to basically help him with, you know, quantum physics and maths and stuff like that. And we get this moment where you apologize for not going to Robin Williams' dead wife's funeral because of a damn conference. But then at the end, you talk about watching Matt Damon blow it all away and the pain of having to watch all that. What's your sense of that character? Is he a good guy or a bad guy or somewhere in between?
Somewhere in between. He's like a what's he called the character in the Mozart's opponent. What's he called the villain there? Not the villain. Salieri.
Oh, yes, Salieri. Lucky someone's in the back to tell you. I have no one.
Yeah. I got two people here, like, just to give me, prompt me and make sure that I say the right thing. Yeah.
So he's like Salieri. Fair enough. This is not a tabloid show. It's a film show. But I was amazed this morning. People know you have some famous children, but you have 8 children. I'm a dad of 3, and I bore people all the time talking about my small children. Do you have any parental advice, having 8 children, and you seem to have children who all still speak to you and are very fond of you? How the hell did you maintain such a successful career and raise 8 children?
Well, it wasn't that stressful, my career. I mean, I took it pretty easy. I worked since 1989. I worked about four months a year, which is easy, and changed diapers 8 months a year. I don't interfere with them. I don't interfere in their lives. I don't interfere with their decisions. I give them a lot of love. That's all.
Okay. Well, that sounds pretty good advice to me. And then finally, I read this funny but very cruel thing this morning that said, some reviewer once said about you, you had a constantly forgettable face. Now, if that was me, I'd be calling up lawyers and suing people and stuff like that. But you seem to, if you pardon the pun, take it on the chin and almost embrace that.
Yeah, that was actually, it was Milos Forman who said.
Oh.
That's why he cast me as Goya, because nobody could recognize me as me. But he hadn't seen many of my films, it's not an insult, because I try to be somebody else than me in every role I do, and especially here in Dune.
Yeah, yeah. Well, listen, you've been very successful at that, as I hope you continue to be in Dune Part 2 and all sorts of other things. You sound like a cool and a lovely man. It's been delightful to talk to you. Thank you, Stellan.
Oh, thank you very much. And give my love to Ireland.
I will, of course. Thanks a million. Cheers.
Cheers.
The great Stellan Skarsgård there, talking to me about family life and acting, and of course, Dune Part 2, which is in cinemas from this very Friday, the 1st of March. Well worth a watch. Up next, Adam Sandler in space. Now you're welcome back to Screen Time News Talks TV and Movie Show. Now, we were talking about Dune before the break, but there are other new movie releases this week. One in particular, very intriguing, on Netflix, Adam Sandler's latest Netflix movie, Spaceman. And also an equally intriguing movie called Brendan Gleeson's Farewell to Hughes's, which is all about Brendan Gleeson while saying farewell to a music venue and pub in Dublin. I'm delighted to be joined now by arts critic and film critic, Chris Wasser. Chris, hello.
Hello, John. Delighted to be here.
Good, good. So listen, Spaceman on Netflix from this Friday, the 1st of March. The leap year nearly had me, but it is the 1st of March. Adam Sandler doing his latest Netflix movie. He's in a contract with them, as far as I know. And he's a lonely spaceman.
That is essentially it in one. Spaceman. It's also such a simple but effective title, and probably the latest good Adam Sandler film. We've had a few of them. He does have this lucrative contract with Netflix at the minute, which I believe he extended. I think it was supposed to be 4 pictures, but now it's going to be 8 or 12. And I think he's on a good run. If you disregard Murder Mystery, we'll just forget that even exists. Murder Mystery.
I'm sorry,
too.
I have to interject there because I loved Uncut Gems. I thought Hustle was great, but Howie Halloween, and I don't say this stuff lightly, was disgustingly bad. It was atrocious. It wasn't a film, and it was offensive. Sorry, I was like, what? Because I like Adam Sandler, but I thought that was terrible. Sorry.
Yeah. No, it comes with a disclaimer, my approval of Adam Sandler. It's like you can put Murder Mystery in the bin, Halloween, let's just pretend it doesn't exist. But there have been a few lately over the past 12 months. Leo, where he played a sort of a therapist lizard, the animation, that was quite sweet. He had the bar mitzvah film that he made with his teenage daughters. I thought that you were so not invited to my bar mitzvah. He seems to be looking out, and he's involved in the production of these films. That's why I say that he's doing this. He's looking at these almost obscure, maybe underappreciated novels to bring to the screen. And in keeping in line with that, we have Spaceman, which is an adaptation of a novel by Yaroslav Kalfar, a Czech novelist, whose 2017 sci-fi absurdist novel Spaceman of Bohemia went down very well with critics. So in this film, he takes center stage and he is playing this Czech astronaut named Jakub Prochaska. And what's happening is that these mysterious purple dust clouds have formed near Jupiter. And, you know, all of the Earth's nations are like, what is this? What are they? But they won't send anyone on a mission because it's too dangerous. So the Czech Republic thinks, well, we can get ahead here. And they send one of their brightest minds, that's Sandler's Jakub, to investigate. There are a few problems. It's a year-long mission and, you know, they're trying to keep costs down so only one person can go. John, that's an awful long time to be by yourself in space. And so when we check in with Jakub at the beginning and when Mission Control, led by Isabella Rossellini, when they check in, they discover that Jakub, he's not in the best state. You know, his body is beginning to kind of, you know, the isolation has taken a toll on his mind, on his body. He started to worry that his wife back on Earth, played by Carey Mulligan, she's no longer answering his calls. And if that wasn't bad enough, he has started to hallucinate. Well, he thinks at first that they might be hallucinations, and so do we, but it might be more. He started to see this enormous extraterrestrial spider in the spaceship with him. And not just that, it's not just an enormous spider, it's an enormous talking spider. And he says that he's from the beginning of time, he's from you know, a distant planet, and he's come to check in on this skinny human, and he wants to make friends with him.
Yeah, no, I've seen this as well. And Paul Dano voices the aforementioned spider.
Yes, Paul Dano. And straight away, that's, I mean, if you tell me before I've seen this thing, Paul Dano was voicing a spider, I'm in. You know, that's it's going to look interesting. It's going to sound interesting. And the two of them, they make a connection. I mean, at first, Jakub, he responds to this situation the way that anyone would. He locks himself in a different chamber in the spaceship, panics. You know, he thinks that he's beginning to lose his mind, and he thinks that the spider might be a threat. He tries to fumigate the place, but he realizes that this spider is just there to make a connection, and that's exactly what he requires. So it's almost like it's this sort of therapy client kind of relationship forms between them, where the spider just keeps him company. He kind of he has this ability, this weird telepathic ability to kind of conjure up thoughts in Jakob's mind, and he helps him sort of deal with problems in the past because Jakub is not having a good time with his wife back on Earth, and he actually doesn't know that she's left him. And Isabella Rossellini back at Mission Control, she doesn't want Jakub to know that because she thinks he might be into spiral. So basically, this talking spider, John, has come along at a very important time.
Indeed he has, yeah, just when you needed a talking spider. There's Paul Dano in the outer shell of your spaceship. So look, you have to applaud, as you're saying, Adam Sandler for taking this, you know, I don't think it's terribly well-known novel, or certainly I'd never heard about it, an absurdist novel set in space. And what I think you have to applaud about this, and I want to know what you take on this, Adam Sandler is very good in this. He's kind of nearly in tears the whole way through, or has a tear in his eye. Like, he does the melancholy spaceman very well, I felt.
I think so. He is a fine dramatic actor when he wants to be. And that's the important thing that I think I've said it on this show before, probably when reviewing a bad Adam Sandler film, that it's such a shame that he, you know, he's often known for these broad and body comedies in which, you know, he's not terrible in them. It's just, you can always tell you're punching below your weight here. And you're making films for a certain audience because, you know, these things have brought you your fortune and, you know, they're reliable and they're quick to make and you can just knock one out after the other. But when he puts the effort in, it's just brilliant to watch him. Because in this, it's quite an understated performance. You know, he barely cracks a smile at all. He's keeping a straight face. I mean, there are comedic elements to this. You know, we're talking about Paul Dano voicing, you know, an extraterrestrial spider. That is inherently funny. And the longer we get to see this spider, it's a weird creation. You know, he's almost the size of Adam Sandler. And it's a spider. So, you know, inherently creepy, but there's something very cuddly about him too. And especially when he starts discovering some of the food on board, he's particularly keen on a sort of hazelnut chocolate spread that he carries around the spaceship. And all of this sounds quite goofy, but I think it was actually done with this delicacy and charm and sweetness, that we're basically just watching. You know, it's like, it's almost like a E.T. for this lonely frazzled space explorer. It's sort of a grown-up E.T. vibe.
Yeah, now you see, we may be departing roads here because I mentioned Adam Sandler's great performance and he's very good in it as well. But I found the spider thing more goofy than charming, I have to say. I know what they were going for, but at times I couldn't figure out if it was meant to be humorous or not. Now, I know the stuff with the chocolate spread he's eating is humorous, but the actual characterization of him, I wasn't sure if it was goofy or sincere or a mix of both, but it didn't quite flow with that. Plus, and I don't know how you feel about this, I'm sensing you didn't, but I actually found the first part of the movie just a bit too slow. There was too much of him in space talking to this spider. So I'm not sure that worked for me, but I'm sensing it did for you.
Oh, it did. Yeah. I was on board with the pace and with the temperature of this film because it does move quite slow and it kind of, you know, it maybe does require a lot of patience at times. But I thought it paid off in the end. There's lovely. I mean, it's kind of a shame that we don't get to see more of Carey Mulligan and Adam Sandler together, just in these, not so much flashbacks, but Hanush, which is the name that Adam Sandler's character gives to the spider. He's sort of forcing Jakob to look back, you know, to examine his memories and to kind of, you know, see where he might have gone wrong in his past relationships. And we do see, you know, snippets of Sandler and Carey Mulligan together. And we see that Carey Mulligan is just brilliant. It doesn't, however big or small the role, Mulligan's always the best thing in whatever she's in. So it's probably a shame that we don't get to see more of her. So I had a few problems with that. There are some things towards the end of the film which are a little bit wobbly in terms of, you know, what exactly the purple space dust is and what happens when they get close to it. But I thought there's for the ideas that it has there and the fact that it was taking risks with them, I quite liked it. And for me, it paid off. I thought it was quite tender, thoughtful. It did make me laugh. It did actually bring a tear to my eye that always gets an extra star, John. And I thought I thought Max Richter's score was terrific. We're talking Max Richter in Leftovers territory here. And that haunting hypnotic space score went very well with sort of low key, you know, rusty visual. I quite like the fact that the spaceship, it's almost like, it reminds me of, you know, it's a very different film from the original Alien. But you remember the spaceship in Alien, it was rusty and beat up and it looked lived in. That's kind of what Sandler's character has in this thing. You know, it's not the most reliable looking object. And you remember that he's at the very edge of the galaxy. It just looks completely beat up, but I like that. It had a lived in quality to it. So I got on very well with this.
Yeah. The other thing that I didn't quite hang together, now maybe I just didn't understand it, but this is from a Czech writer, but I was unclear when it was meant to be set because they were referring to Czechoslovakia. That's who he's on a mission for, which would put it somewhere in the late 80s. But I didn't think that made a huge amount of sense. And they're supposedly in a space race with South Korea to get to the purple dust. And there are intimations of his father having a past in the Czech Revolution and stuff. But it didn't hang together for me, that aspect of the story.
Yeah, it sounds like I had to brush aside an awful lot of content here to enjoy this. I'm a little bit unsure about the setting. I was a little bit unsure about the accent that Adam Sandler gives in this film. It's quite, you know, every now and then it sounds as if he's trying to do a Czech accent, and then it comes out in an American. And I suppose I was excusing it because I was reading a little bit about the author of the novel, Yaroslav Kalfar, and how he had actually moved to America in his early teens. And I don't know whether they were corresponding with the author, Sandler, and the production team, and they thought, whatever this guy sounds like now, that's what I'll aim for. But it is a little bit confusing about which time it's set in, but I quite liked that. It's like it's not restricting itself to any sort of time. You know, it doesn't have to kind of have a reference to whatever real life space adventures. It's just, it kind of exists in its own world. I will say though, the book does, or the film differentiates from the novel wildly towards the end. And I think I haven't actually read the novel, but I was reading about the third, or the finale basically. And it does take an awful lot more risks in the book. And I thought, okay, the ending is maybe a bit safe compared to the book, but sure, look, we'll let that go.
I actually liked the ending. The last lines of dialogue I thought were very good, well rendered, let's say. Okay, so slightly differing takes on Spaceman, but what would you say stars-wise?
I think Sandler's in terrific form. Loved, you know, him hanging out with a spider on the other side of the galaxy. I'm going to go with 4 for this. And wow. more serious fare, Adam Sandler, please.
Okay, well, I'm going to give it 3. But we can't agree on everything. But it's certainly worth a watch. I don't think I'm arguing that point. So let's take a quick clip of Spaceman.
I don't understand. Why commit to a promise if it can readily be broken? What purpose does such a commitment serve?
Are you creating these thoughts?
No. These are your thoughts. I am simply finding them with you.
No. I'm not allowing that. Stop what you're doing.
Why do you resist this exploration? Let me help you. You long for your mate only once she leaves.
See yourself.
Why? Where was this yearning when you were together?
That's a clip of Spaceman, which is now on Netflix since March the 1st. Now, just time, Chris, for you to quickly tell me about Brendan Gleeson's, I was going to say his latest documentary, I don't think he's done that many, but it's Brendan Gleeson's Farewell to Hughes is all about a pub that was a great place for a music session.
That's it, yeah. So some listeners might be familiar with the pub Uses on the corner of Chancery Street, just behind Dublin's forecourt. But in 2021, it closed its doors quietly. And you had Martin Hughes, son of Michael Hughes, who was the beloved landlord of this pub for close to 50 years. He closed the doors quietly on this place that wasn't just a renowned early house for, you know, solicitors and journalists and local market traders, but it was a mecca of traditional music in the area and in Dublin. And kind of people came from all over the country to play in here for over 35 years. And one of the people who came to, you know, participate in these legendary weekend sessions was Brendan Gleeson. You know, whenever he'd finish a film, and if he was back in the country, he'd go straight to Hughes's. So he was quite, you know, upset that, you know, they couldn't have this big farewell night because it was actually closed during COVID. The decision to make to actually close the pub for good wasn't because of COVID, but it would just happen to be closed at that time. So the Irish Traditional Music Archive at one stage came to Brendan Gleeson about working on a project. They wanted him to make a documentary about traditional Irish music, and he decided, this is what I want the documentary to be about. So they approached Martin Hughes. They approached this music documentary maker, Ciarán Amuigh, who works on TG4, great filmmaker. And they agreed to basically go into the place, gather up as many of the musicians and the players and the pub clients, John, who frequented there over the years, to basically participate in this 5-day long, you know, on and off session that was filmed around the end of March 2022. And that's what we're getting here. So it's an unusual film that's coming from a very good place. It aims to kind of give this, you know, legendary Irish pub and, you know, as I said, you know, this bastion of traditional Irish music a proper send off.
Right. Okay. And does it do it successfully?
I think so. Yeah. I think these things are very difficult to probably, and Brendan Gleeson and Ciarán Amuigh have been talking about this. They are quite difficult to capture on tape, but there's a lovely combination of, you know, new recordings. You've got Sean McGinley in there talking about what the place meant to him. You've got Barry Gleeson, Brendan's brother, performing with him, because Brendan Gleeson, of course, is a great fiddle player. We saw him play in the Banshees of Inisherin. You've got grainy archive footage to fill in the blanks and tell us about the Hughes family. And somehow they managed to do it all in 60 minutes. It's a short...
Yeah, I was going to say, 60 minutes.
Yeah, it sounds like you know, you think of that length and you think, well, this is probably made for television. And you know, Brendan Gleeson has been saying that when they were making it, they didn't really know what shape it was going to take. It started off as a project for the Irish Traditional Music Archive, and then it got accepted by Dublin International Film Festival. From one sold out event, the Lighthouse and Palace Cinema got on board. So there's an audience for this. I think that actually goes past the user's clientele. But just to remove all of that, it's a lovely piece. It does what it's supposed to. Brendan Gleeson is very good at, you know, it's his name above the door and it's his name that will get people in to see this film.
Yeah.
But it's not the Brendan Gleeson show. Although I will say, if somebody wanted to, you know, throw money at Brendan Gleeson to make a documentary about, you know, other kind of beloved Dublin institutions, I would happily watch it. He's very good here.
Yeah. Yeah, and he is a real enthusiast for music and our shared history. You know, I'm a child of Dublin. We used to park in the Smithfield Markets when we go into town on a Saturday. I passed that pub for years and yeah. I was never in it once. It really is a tragedy for me, for no one else, that I never went into it. But it's great that there's a movie like this. So it seems almost, you know, trivial to ask for a star rating for this, but I'm honor bound to. What are you going to say for Brendan Gleeson's Farewell to Hughes's?
Yeah, look, it's a nice piece, and as I said, it does what it's supposed to do, and that it gives you as a proper farewell. So yeah, 4 stars.
4 stars, lovely. And that's getting a limited release. I know it's in the Palais. I also know it's in the Lighthouse. Hopefully it might make it to a few more places. And indeed, if you'd like to hear the great man himself, that's Brendan Gleeson, as opposed to Chris Wasser, who's also great. Let's not forget that. But he was talking to Pat Kenny earlier in the week, and you can hear that back on newstalk.com or the Newstalk app, where indeed you can hear this show. And on this show, you will be hearing more from Chris Wasser in the coming weeks and months, all going to plan. Chris, thanks a million.
Thanks a million, John.
Chris Wasser there, reviewing Spaceman on Netflix and Brendan Gleeson's Farewell to Hughes's, both on, well, one on Netflix and one in select cinemas from this Friday, the 1st of March. Up next, Mairéad Ronan and Jenny Kelly on their favourite movie. Now, you're welcome back to Screen Time, News Talk's TV and movie show. It's that stage of the week where we talk to someone well known about their favourite movie. We're getting 2 for the price of 1 this week. I'm delighted to be joined by, I was going to call them titans of Irish broadcasting, but that might be, you know, a bit much, but let's find out. I'm joined now by Mairéad Ronan and Jenny Kelly, well known people of Irish life and now co-hosts of the Jenny and Mairéad Now podcast. Guys, hello.
John, how Hi. Are you?
All good. Here, John.
Good, good, good. So listen, who wants to go first?
Oh, Mairéad is dying to go first. She just looked at me and went, me,
John. Because her name is first in the podcast, so everything else I get to go first. Yeah. Well, Jenny and Mairéad now.
She
now it's going to be Mairéad first.
Mairéad
first.
It just doesn't go. Mairéad and Jenny, Mairéad, come on.
I heard a report, or I read something once where it said interviewing you was like having 2 school children and you were fighting for their time. I'm getting the sense of that already. So Mairéad,
yes,
would you go first with your favorite movie? Tell us what it is and why.
Okay, my favorite movie, it might be a surprising one. It is When Harry Met Sally, which I think is the greatest rom-com, or geez, even just com out there. I love it so much. Why do I love it? I was probably too young to watch it when I did, first off. It was released in 1989. I was only 9 then, John, so I didn't see it then. I saw it when I was about 12 or 13, probably 13, on video at home and watched it with my mother. And I just loved everything about it. I loved, at that time when I was about 13, you know, I started to have some friends who were boys, but not my boy, but not my boyfriends. And I suppose I loved that whole narrative of, you know, having a friend who's a boy, and then look, where does it take you in life? You know, I loved the whole thing.
Yeah.
The chemistry between them was just brilliant. And it's just such a gorgeous story. And it stood the test of time. I mean, anytime I watch it, I still laugh out loud at it. I still think it's beautiful. It's shot beautifully. The script is very funny. And the soundtrack is definitely one of the best ever made.
Yeah. And you know what? I had to rewatch it recently for something. And it stands the test of time in terms of there's nothing where you're cringy, really going, oh my God, that's so of the time. We can't say that anymore. There's no real clangers like that. And I don't think, anyway.
No. Well, I suppose there is that Meg Ryan fake orgasm scene, which is kind of
yes,
cringy.
Yes, but we were going to get to that.
I mean, that is kind of cringy. And I think a lot of people remember the movie for that. But I don't think that's the standout moment in the film. For me, it's the line. It's the when Billy Crystal, Harry, says, you know, towards the end, spoiler alert, everybody, for people who haven't seen that movie, I came here tonight because when you realize that you want to spend the rest of your life with someone, you want the rest of your life to start as soon as possible. That's the standout moment. It's so gorgeous.
Perfect.
And they are kind of believable, aren't they, as people who might actually be friends and then fall in love?
Yeah, I think they're very, very believable as their characters. She's such a Sally and he's such a Harry. And, and you can see he's so annoying, but she likes those quirks and her funny way of ordering food. It's so annoying to go out to dinner with her, but he kind of loves that too about her. It's just gorgeous. And ultimately that's what, you know, a friendship is about, you know, that those annoying things that your friend does. But when you fall madly in love with someone, they are your best friend.
And it's also absolutely hilarious, isn't there? You know it better than I do, but where he's in bed with someone and he says, "Where were you when Kennedy was shot?" And she says, "Kennedy's been shot," or something like that. Like there's laugh out loud moments in it. Jenny, I should ask you, have you seen When Harry Met Sally? We're going to get to your favourite movie, but I presume you have and you like it.
Yeah, my God. I think everybody loves that movie. I've never met anybody who doesn't like that movie.
And we love Nora Ephron.
I love Nora Ephron. Yeah. But I always remember obviously the long scene, but when they're traveling in the car, so they have to travel. And just the script was so quick and it was so funny and it was so believable and so real. But I also, and I can't remember their names, but I also remember their best friends.
Oh, Jess and Marie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was it Jesse?
Oh God,
I can't remember.
Yeah.
But I just remember their best friends being so integral to the whole thing as well, being so important because they were able, because you could learn more about how they felt about the other person through what they said to their best friends.
So
and of course everybody does remember that scene, but I think it's the script and the chemistry between Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan it was electric. Absolutely. I love it. And what Marae said is so true. You could sit down tomorrow and watch that and just you know, you wouldn't be distracted. You'd be roaring laughing. You'd be just thinking how clever the whole thing is. Love it.
Yeah.
And people always say it's one of those that, you know, it's on TV and you just watch the first few minutes and that's you for 2 hours because you can't not.
Well, that's
watch
the other thing
it,
about
you know?
It, John. It's not a 2 hour movie. I love that. It's not very
long.
I think it's less than 1 hour 40 minutes. So for me, again, that's just like the cherry on top of that movie.
Yeah. God, I should know this, movie buff. Anyway, let's move on. So that's a brilliant choice, Mairead. Let's go to Jenny now and see what her favorite movie is.
And look, I'm sure what everybody says to you, John, because it's impossible to choose your favorite movie. And I have so many, but when I was asked to do this and I started thinking, I went, God, it's funny. And I don't know whether this is usual for all the guests you've had in the show. You do go back to a time in your life. Like for me, it's that kind of, you know, 9, 10, 11, 12, those, like that age was just really important for me. And Steven Spielberg, I'm a huge fan of his, but for me, it had to be E.T.
You saw this when you were 9 or 10 then, presumably.
I was 10. So to put this in context, and Mairead knows this story. So it came out in America in June 1982. And my family took a trip to America in June 1982.
And if you remember, very posh, John, very posh.
If you remember,
going to America in the 80s, not to work on a building site.
That's how posh Jenny is.
Happy holiday. So, and if you remember, it took about 6 months before the movies came to Ireland. So you were waiting so you could hear about it. So anyway, we went over. I saw it in a cinema with my family in New York.
Oh,
and in New York, and when we came home from America, A, I spoke with an American accent for 3 months, but B, I also bored everybody. Have you seen E.T.? Have you seen E.T.? And they were like, no, we can't see it till December. So I told all my friends the story. I was just obsessed and I couldn't wait till the movie then eventually came back to Ireland. But I'd ruined it for all my friends by then, so I told them the whole story.
And, you know, if it's your favorite movie, you'll know this, but, you know, it's about an extraterrestrial, but really it's about a child trying to get over his parents' divorce. It's such a sad film.
It is such a sad film. And you're so right, because The scene for me, obviously, when you see E.T. for the first time, but I remember the scene going into the family when Michael and his friends are playing Dungeons and Dragons and the mum, Mary, is zipping around. They've ordered pizza. Now, for me as a 10-year-old in 1982, like to look inside an American home and see like they had, you know, phones hanging off the walls.
Yeah.
You know, and little Gertie, is played by Drew Barrymore, was in watching cartoons on the TV. And like I said, ordering pizza. And for me, the film, exactly that, like it was about obviously a breakup of a family, but it was about friendship, about loyalty, about differences and love ultimately, I think. I think it was all those things,
Have you shown it to your own children?
Oh God, yeah.
Are they fans or...
Yeah, I think, yeah, they are, but not as much as me. Like something happens. It's that magical time in your life. And when that movie comes on, or if anybody starts talking about it, I'm immediately transported back to a time. And like you said, it's so sad. Like the scene towards the end when you think, spoiler alert. When you think
that ship has sailed.
When you think E.T. is dying and Keyes, you know, mean Keyes, the character, is sipping around. And then obviously you see the geranium plant coming back to life. And there's like Elliot realizes that he's going to live. I just remember you're just like, oh!
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong about that movie. I think it is one of Spielberg's best.
Oh, yeah, it's so good.
It's absolutely perfect.
And, and the music. The iconic music.
Of course.
So, Mairead, you're obviously a fan of Jenny's favourite movie as well, right?
I am. And funny enough, my 5-year-old, Bonnie, saw E.T. for the first time when she was about 4 and fell in love with E.T. and has an E.T. teddy that she loves that sits on a shelf that she can reach so she can take him down and cuddle him. So, whereas my other two kids, like, yeah, they like it, but... Bonnie, my youngest, loves
great
E.T. She's great taste. Bonnie has very good taste.
Very good taste.
Well, talking of children and E.T., and this is about you guys, but our third child, that's mine and my wife's, by the way, is called Elliot. He's named Elliot. And everyone who doesn't know me, whenever I say it, they all assume he's called after the boy in E.T. So people love that movie to the point that they assume people name their children after it. Listen, en route to asking you about the podcast, I just want to double check with, we always ask people who aren't actors in this slot, have you guys ever acted, like on stage or on TV or movies or anything like that?
Well, now, Mairead, would you like to go first?
Okay, I'll go first. I have acted in all my school plays in St. Michael's Holy Faith Convent in Finglas, and I was an extra in a Meteor mobile phone ad, John.
Wow,
there you go.
Wow.
And I will take a bow and bow out of this conversation now.
And Jenny?
Yeah, well, I went to the Samuel Beckett Centre in Trinity, which is now the Lear. So
she's really
like,
posh, like so really, really
that's
posh.
Not real posh. That's a talent, Mairead. That's talent. I was one of the 15 picked. And so I have a line from The Snapper. I was in The Snapper, so that's my favorite.
Oh, sorry, I knew that. Yes, of course.
Yeah. How did you forget that, John? Come on.
I'm sorry, yeah.
And like Mairead, you know, school plays, all of that. Yeah, so.
Remind people what your line in The Snapper is again.
Oh, hang on. Let me see if I remember. she goes, gets into character.
Go.
Check out, lady. I won't do it in the accent because I always fail here. But the line was, Jesus, you know your one who's pregnant. Guess who's the da, Mr. Burgess.
Yes.
Wow. Wow, that was you.
John, that was me. I was getting paid a good, like for about 15 years after that. I was still getting checks from the BBC.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. Amazing. At what age were you when that was filmed?
So I was straight out of drama school. So I was only like 21. Yeah.
Yeah.
So okay. I was 21. Okay. Yeah.
I'd love to ask you more about that, but time is against us. And I have to get to Jenny and Mairead now. So my understanding of how this podcast came about, which is available on all good podcast platforms, was just that you guys thought, you know what, now's the time for me and my best pal, or one of them, to sit down and talk about where our lives are at now. And lo and behold, people seem very into that.
Well, I think what we were saying is, like, we were chatting about it for a good bit, and we kind of felt that women within our age group, like 40s, 50s, you know, that they kind of felt that they weren't being represented on air. Now, you might go, hang on a second, there's loads of women on air. But it was all a bit kind of doom and gloom. We were like, where's the crack?
Where's the fun?
Where's the fun? Where's the kind of element of when you meet up with your best female friend and you literally talk nonstop for, like, you need almost a stopwatch. You know, you go, you go, you go, you go. And we kind of just felt that that was missing. So that's really was it, wasn't it, Mairead?
That was it. And obviously our years and years of working on radio together, we knew we were able to do it. And
yes,
we just said, right, all the conversations we're having over cups of tea, cake in Jenny's kitchen or mine or in our lovely Dunmore East, we said, let's have them on a microphone. And that's how it started. And it's, it's proven that we were right. There was a gap.
Yeah, exactly.
And also, but in your defense, I mean, you're not new to this because you mentioned the radio there. When you used to be on the Ray Darcy show, a big part of that show was all of you chatting, but your friendship came across. So in a way, but you tell me, you're kind of picking up a stitch that you had from a previous time. Like,
yeah, I think that's it. And our listeners are very much picking up us again, because, you know, we were on with Ray. Ray did his thing. Jenny stepped back. I stayed with Today FM. I took a step back. And but those listeners who were with us back then are now with us at a different stage in their lives. Some of their kids are teenagers or grown up, or some of them have had marriage that have ended and they're married again, or
some of them are back dating.
Yeah. Some of them are living in different countries. You know, we've got these women listening to us all over the world as well, who we were part of their lives when they were maybe young, free and single, and now they're not. So it's really, really lovely to connect with them again.
Well, it sounds like a slice of, can you say a slice of fresh air? That's bad grammar, but you know what I mean. A bolt of sunshine. I like it. Slice of fresh air. Yeah, exactly. Don't use that now. I want checks like you get from the BBC if I hear that coming up again.
I've written it down, John. It's mine now.
Their favourite movies are respectively When Harry Met Sally and E.T. Their podcast, Jenny and Mairead Now, is available on all good platforms and proving wildly popular. Guys, thanks a million for chatting to me.
Thanks a million, John. Great talking to you.
Cheers, John.
Plus, you know, you just get to a certain point where you get tired of the whole thing.
What whole thing?
The whole life of a single guy thing. You meet someone, you have the safe lunch, you decide you like each other enough to move on to dinner. You go dancing, go back to her place, you have sex, and the minute you're finished, you know what goes through your mind? How long do I have to lie here and hold her before I can get up and go home? Is 30 seconds enough?
That's what you're thinking. Is that true?
Sure. All men think that. How long do you like to be held afterwards? All night, right?
See, that's the problem. Somewhere between 30 seconds and all night is your problem.
I don't have a problem.
Yeah, you do.
A clip there from When Harry Met Sally. I could have done either movie. I just decided to go with When Harry Met Sally. I could have easily gone for E.T. because they're both superb movies. And Jenny Kelly and Mairead Ronan are both superb radio guests. And as I say, you can hear them in their podcast, Jenny and Mairead Now. That's it for this week. Thanks to Anne-Marie Kane, who helped out on the show. Next week, I'm going to be talking to Ray Winston, yes, as part of the new Netflix series, The Gentleman, and some other fascinating people. Besides, in the meantime, I'll just remind you, this show is available as a podcast every Friday at 5 p.m. on newstalk.com or the Newstalk app powered by Go Loud. And it's on the radio every Saturday at 6 p.m. here on Newstalk. Thank you for listening. Enjoy the rest of your weekend and have a safe week ahead.